We are about to chat with a Georgia foster mom about the abuse of power we are continuing to witness around the country. Join us today on Fostering the Future.
Welcome to the Fostering the Future podcast, a show about all things child welfare, dependency, adoption, and foster care. Here are your hosts, veterans in the world of child welfare, Jack and Kat.
We believe that every human has incredible and equal value regardless of what side of the courtroom we sit on. We hope that everyone feels welcome and accepted here on Fostering the Future.
Make sure you follow us on Facebook or Instagram as Fostering the Future Podcast, or check us out on our website at fosteringthefuturepodcast.org. Join us as we continue our conversation about the Hernandez family.
In my advocacy work, I go back to civil rights, like just creative different ways to try to have an impact. This lady that you mentioned, I have not heard her name before. What can we do collectively to like knock her feet out from under her? Like,
it's a fantastic question, especially someone like her. I mean, if you want to Google her, you'll be blown away by the amount of families that have already tried to sue her and all of her coworkers, right? Everybody on her floor in Alaska quit because she was bullying them into changing documents and saying parents were abusing kids when it wasn't happening.
How come she's not out of medicine?
There's only 400 child abuse pediatricians nationwide. And I think it's just this system where they're going to die on this hill. I mean, that's just my personal opinion, because how is she not? She's already been being sued, but we all know the medical industry is tough to sue, right? They have so much protecting them from liability. I don't know how a hospital knows her situation in the past and hires her. How in God's name would you do that? Why would you do that? It's disgusting. And what can we do? That, I don't know. I know we're working with different organizations now trying to specifically get the cases in Georgia heard. You know, we have a campaign out to Governor Brian Kemp asking him to meet with these families, meet with Spike Cohen. Let's sit down and have a talk so that we can investigate these families and we can start doing what's best for the families in Georgia. What can we do for bad doctors? I don't know. I don't know how a hospital would hire her. And I have a lot of people here recently reaching out to me, strangers, multiple a week. They're terrified to take their kids to a doctor now.
Yeah, absolutely.
An interview, and now I don't know what to do. What happens, you know, if my child gets sick? And obviously, I'm not a professional in this area. I can only tell you my opinion. I think you need to do a search before you go to a big children's hospital, because no way would I go to Johns Hopkins in Florida. No way would I do.
Or do you guys have like a hit list? Okay, so back in civil rights days, they had the Green Book. Mm-hmm. So back families, when they were going anywhere, vacation or whatever, they had the Green Book of places that they knew were safe mm-hmm. to stop. So like, I wonder of like the hit list of don't go here. These are the bad doctors.
Yes.
There's got to be something. There has to be.
I don't think she'll mind me saying this. I talked with Parents Behind the Pinwheels about this and just trying to get her opinion on it. It's scary to put this kind of stuff out there because people are crazy. And then they're going to start saying, oh, well, you're making it so that parents don't want to go to the hospital anymore. You're going to cause more. You're going to teach the abusers.
Well, I mean, I think they're making us not want to go to the hospital anymore by arresting innocent parents and taking their children from them for over a year. I think that's what's making that happen.
And there's do's and don'ts, right? Like I teach my kids, there's a good way and a bad way to do almost anything in this world. If you think of anything, there's a good way to drive. There's a bad way to drive. We need to start educating ourselves and teaching young parents, especially with babies, what their rights are. they talk to a child abuse pediatrician, they act as law. Whatever they say, they use against you. So first of all, you should not talk to anyone in a hospital if you do not know exactly their position. Second of all, I wouldn't go to a big children's hospital. I personally would go to a smaller hospital. The other thing people need to remember, if your child unfortunately has a heart condition or has been in a car accident, right? Or a motorbike accident, all these four-wheeler accidents, those aren't the problems. That is not when you get in trouble. The problem is when you don't know what's going on with your child and you walk in and say, I don't know what's happening. Or if you say, I think my child might have this, that is when the problem happens. And that's really scary because that's what happened with every single one of these cases, parents behind the pinwheels, you guys, all of them. If you don't know what's going on, then they take that and they run with it. And they put you as a abuser immediately.
With Melissa's story, she was like, the main reason that things started to happen, it was the not knowing how a certain bone broke. And, but the truth is, like, when something happens in a moment with your kid and your adrenaline is going, or even like if you're in a car accident or something like that, everything happens so fast, it's hard to really know which way was their leg going. It's not something that you expect to happen.
When you go somewhere and Matt and Taki, for instance, they're answering every single question because they're scared for their baby. They know they did not hurt their baby to answer anything you ask them. And what happened is they even gave, I wonder if it was when I was releasing gas from Emma and I was doing the bicycle. You know, Matt said that even to the cop. I wonder if it was when I did this. They used that and they twist that on him, that he was changing his story. When in reality, they asked him, do you know of any way that this could have happened?
Right.
And you're like, you're putting parents in this horrible position. So we have to advocate, we have to teach people and educate them. You do have to be careful what you say, even if you are innocent. You have to. You need to be careful who you're talking to, because not everybody is on your side. Some people want to steal your children. I think we'll never abolish CPS because there are parts of that that are important, and we do want to keep kids safe. I think we all agree with that. We want children safe, but we're doing it the wrong way. And this child abuse pediatrician subspecialty, when Eli Newberg brought this up, he wanted it to be labeled something forensic. He did not want it to be child abuse pediatrician. He literally said, this is going to become a problem. Mm. This is not going to go good. And look at what's happened. They are getting paid. There are contracts between child abuse pediatricians and the state, you guys. It's supposed to be public knowledge, but it is hard to get. But it's big money. It's big money of what they get paid to call abuse.
The CPT stuff is smaller. I mean, maybe there is room to abolish that piece of it.
That's my thought. My thought is the world will never get on board with what I want. Child abuse pediatricians have only been around since 2010, and they are helping nobody. Stats are only going up. It's just getting
worse. And it's a conflict of interest for a doctor to be involved in the removal of children. As you were saying, they were getting paid for it. We know Sally Smith was getting paid for it. In addition to that, Sally Smith owns a pediatric practice over in St. Pete. Clients were being funneled to her. So she was getting paid. Actually, I think she was getting paid three different ways because she was involved somehow in that Suncoast Center. That was the agency. She was getting paid as a member of the CPT team, the head of the CPT team. And then she was getting the patients put at her hospital after kids were being put into care. So she was getting paid three times for each. Like, there should not ever be a financial gain for a doctor to claim child abuse ever.
And that's the problem with foster care, too. And the reason I think we need to revamp it with Title 4E. There's so much incentives with these kids. You're paying so many people to take care of foster kids. When in reality, we should take this money, put it towards actual parents who are homeless or struggling with a dependency on drugs, alcohol, who just need a mentor. They need help. They need parenting classes. We should take this money and help people to become the best version of their self. And you can weed them out pretty quickly, you guys. I'm sure you've seen it. You know who wants to fight for their kids. You know who's willing. Of course, there are bad people. There are bad people who use and abuse their kids. That's where adoption and long-term foster care is great. But there are so many people who just need help. They need a helping hand from the community. We shouldn't take kids from a home just because they don't have electricity or food. Right. We need
poverty is not neglect, but it's conflated as neglect. Yes. Yeah.
And it's so sad because some of them just need help. They love their children and they need help. Life is hard. Life is hard. I'm happily married with the best support system, healthy kids, and life is hard for me. So I imagine if you're down and you don't have a support system and you don't have a job, I imagine life is really hard for them. We need to get back to a place where we're helping people. We are causing so much pain and suffering that by the time kids are aging out, we are causing so much harm, you guys. It's so bad.
Destroying families.
The foster care system is always harmed, you know?
You're right.
I think if we just see it now.
I agree with you on that completely. I'm saddened that apparently it's always been corrupt and I just didn't see the parts of that.
Yeah, yeah. Same. I've been doing this for 18 years and it's like, clearly I was clueless. And wow, what an education over the last 2 to 3 years I've had.
One of the things that I've noticed, and I'm curious how your situation has played into what I've seen, because in the situations that I have seen, I've kind of categorized the players in three ways. Are you ready?
Yeah.
First, there's the people that didn't know that a mistake was being made, right? But then they kind of stand back and throw their hands up and don't really help to resolve the mess that was created. Right. Yeah. So I see a lot of people involved that's their involvement. They didn't maliciously do anything. They didn't know anything bad was happening. They didn't know that a doctor was not doing the full testing, maybe. Right. Because at a certain point, it's got to become clear, especially when they went to the aunt and the uncle and there's more bones breaking and bruising or lesions. And then there's bruising.
Even went into the foster home.
Right.
Daycare was reporting
insane.
The daycare reported. So for that, like at some point, everybody involved has got to know that this is fishy. Right. So you've got the people who didn't know, but then they like distance themselves or kind of stand back. Then you've got the people that kind of had an idea that something fishy was going on, that a mistake was being made, but they just kind of let it happen. And they're like, well, it's not my job to tell the doctor. Right. Mm-hmm. I'm following the steps of my job and my tasks.
Yeah.
But then when they realize that this mistake has been made, they feel guilty because they didn't do anything to stop it. Right. And then they kind of double down to protect themselves, which results in more abuse of power. Kind of how we were talking about some of these people. Maybe they weren't the perpetrator. Maybe they weren't the doctor. Maybe they were a nurse who called the doctor in. But then they're getting on a stand and maybe saying things that aren't true, manipulating facts. Maybe they're preventing a mom from getting medical records because a part of them knows that they were part of this mistake being made. And then you've got the people who've actually perpetrated the mistake, who tend to either have a ton of pride or ego or guilt, and they are the most intense abusers of power. The only other people that I have seen in these situations are people who kind of go, yeah, I can tell something weird's going on, but I'm not allowed to say anything, or I can't do anything about it, or I can only do what my boss tells me. So that's kind of what I've seen. Is that kind of characterized the roles that you have seen play out in the Hernandez case at all?
So for the Hernandez case, there has not been one single player that has put in any care or concern whatsoever. And I feel like I can say that with confidence, which saddens me. No, I don't think anyone involved, not in defects. When I tell you we sat down and had an hour-long meeting with three county directors and a regional director, how do you do that and have them all listen to everything that I'm saying and give all the facts of the case? And at the time, the dad is still getting visits. Why doesn't he have his kids? If the dad's not been arrested and has no crimes against him, why are the children not with the father?
And clearly she's not in the home because you've taken her out.
You've taken her out. She was homeless. Our state made her homeless and made her couch surf for months, for 10 months. Why do they listen to a meeting and then leave us and say nothing more anymore? If you had someone who did care, I just feel like they would have stood up. Now, in the past with other kids, I don't think there's ever been a caseworker where I've been like, wow, she really cares about the kids. That's just not been our experience. I am not in any way suggesting caseworkers are not good. I am positive there are plenty of good ones out there. But I have to say with sincerity, I've not experienced that myself. My husband and I in our 13 years of foster care, they were inept. They were lazy. They didn't care. We had foster kids flip our car in a car accident. She is now my daughter. At the time was a foster child. Flipped her car, our car, and I thought, we are going to be in so much trouble for this. Oh my gosh. I called, is that 5 o'clock? No one answered. 2 days go by, I get an email. Oh yeah, I did get the voicemail about the girls being in the car accident. Glad everything's fine. They did not care. They did not care. Whenever I brought real concerns, they didn't care. In fact, one wanted off of our case because she said I asked too many questions. They wanted my girls to do things like cookie cutter, like robots. And I would say, I don't know about that. Why would we do that? Or wait, why can't she get her permit? Let's talk to the biological mom and find out what the mom says to get the permit. They didn't like me stepping out of my box, out of my lane. They wanted me to do what I'm told. So I don't have experience with good caseworkers. I do have experience with people in administrative positions who definitely cared, 100% cared. Even some inspectors that I think definitely cared, but they're in a different position, right? They're not, once they do their job, they're out of that situation.
They're all wrapped up in a system that harms. And I think that that personally is the big issue for me of still working in the system that destroys people. That's what I've come to realize. The system destroys children and families and really everyone in its path, because it's destroyed me. It destroys workers. I mean, it destroys everything in its path.
Really, it's this abuse of power that is really the part that's too much to bear. But I have had caseworkers who really cared about the kids, really cared about the parents, really wanted to help repair these families, right? I have had that. The vast majority is like a lot of, I would call, lazy and inept. Even that I can stomach, because it's like, that's okay. You're not handling the kids every day. I am. So you could be lazy and inept. I'll bug you enough to get what needs to be done. And I will take care of these kids and make sure they're okay. So I can stomach that. I can't stomach people lying, people stopping families from growing. Like, you have a family, you have a person that wants to grow as a human. Like, why are we not just like throwing money at them and saying, what can we pay for to help you? Like, what classes can we give you? What support can we give you? What can we teach you to help you get to where you want to be? And instead, those are the people that we're standing on their backs and not letting them get up. For me, like, getting through this, like, a big part of that is having a partner like Jack Daddy, my husband, who helps me emotionally, helps me logistically. Like, I couldn't do what we do without him at all. I am literally in here talking to you right now because he is watching all of our children and running, because one of our kids is outgrowing his crib, running around town, picking up a new crib and new mattress. Like, I am very blessed to have that. What really bothers me is like Matt and Tucky not even being able to talk, like not even be able to comfort each other through what's obviously the most horrendous and horrible thing that has happened to them in their life. Like, that is just devastating to not just lose your kids, but then lose your support system. Like,
your sister, English is her second language and she's lived here for a long time, but that's her person too, right? So not just your husband, you can't talk to your sister and that brother-in-law. And those two are very close with the whole family. They do things together, vacations together, camping together, and you're taking that away. So now she still can't talk to her sister and brother-in-law. And I don't fully understand it, but they got the bond modified where Matt and Taki can be together, that she cannot talk to her sister. And that, I have a sister. Besides my husband, she's my best friend. And I just cannot fathom what that would be like for someone to say, you can't talk to her. I talk to her almost every single day.
It's insane to me. Like, who the hell are they?
Yeah. And
to say who you can talk to and who you can't.
List that was created, right? And they put like 60 people from CHOA on this witness list. And they put the sister and brother-in-law on this witness list. But here's the crazy thing. They also put Emma and Aria on this witness list and the DFACS caseworkers. So in reality, by law, they're not allowed to talk to Emma and Aria However, by law, they have court-appointed visits. So you figure that one out.
Like, but also, how are these small children going to be witnesses?
Well, that's the thing. And they brought that up the last hearing. That actually, one of the attorneys did an amazing job. And he's like, Your Honor, I mean, Emma is 1 year old and she's on the witness list. Like, are you going to put her on the stand? And he wasn't being smart. He was trying to say, this is absurd. The caseworkers are on this witness list, you guys. Yet they talk to the parents. In fact, one of the legal document that talks about the actual crime that took place, you guys, the date for the possible crime was January of 2023. Emma was born in March. That means our state is claiming they hurt their baby before she was born. How are we moving forward with a trial where the documents don't even add up? That doesn't even make sense. That should be thrown out and dismissed. It's just so disgusting to me. They have no evidence of this family whatsoever. And same with the other families we're advocating for. This is not isolated. And if you read Parents Trafficking Wills, you're going to see there are people sitting in jail right now. How that gets by a jury trial, I do not know. I know some make plea deals. My heart is broken for these parents, these people sitting in prisons. And I just can't let this happen to the Hernandez family. I just cannot let this happen because it's so wrong. And Governor Kemp is still just ignoring the plea of meet with these families. It's all we're asking for. Meet with them. Look at their cases. His name is on all their legal documents. His name is on all foster care stuff.
I mean, you've spoken a little bit about this, but how has witnessing this affected you and your husband?
It honestly, and please, I hope you understand where I'm coming from, because this sounds like I'm trying to make it about me. And I want to make it very clear I'm not. It's just the truth. If you're going to ask that question, it has affected every part of our life. It's affected every single part of my life. We don't even eat dinner the same amount of times anymore because I have Zoom calls, interviews, Zoom calls with You Are the Power, legal meetings. I wake up every day and I think, what do I need to do today? Who do I need to call today? What do I have to find out what has to be done? It's very exhausting and it's very painful. Matt has been coming to church with us since November. He drives an hour and a half and he comes to church with us. And that part's been really nice to spend time with him. He can now go to church with his wife, which is awesome. But I've watched him be sad and I've watched him be hurt. And it's really hard to watch a grown man be hurt. It's very, very difficult. At the end of the day, I have my husband. At the end of the day, I have my kids. So no matter how difficult it's been on our family, I could end it at any time. I could walk away at any time and I could say, you know what? I'm done. They don't get that luxury. They don't get to do that. These other families do not get to just shut this off and say, I'm done. So I refuse to do the same. And we make it work. I don't let it consume me. I think maybe in the beginning I was. But once we had advocates from You Are the Power, my sister found them. Once we had people helping us and holding our hand, it got so much easier because it was very lonely and it was very scary to imagine watching a family being ripped apart. And I felt like I was just going to see it happen and that I wasn't going to be able to stop it. And I didn't know how I was going to just go on and like live my normal life knowing that this can happen to an innocent family. And it was really just lonely and it was hard. And once people have started jumping on board and Rebecca Lindstrom did that piece, it means so much to me because they're real people, you guys. They're just a real family who loves each other and did nothing wrong. You can't even say, well, you know, they shouldn't have done what they did. They literally did nothing wrong. They brought their baby to a doctor and asked for help. How do you lose your kids by going to a doctor and saying, I need help? I do not understand how that can happen. And it, in the beginning, made me fearful for my own kids. I lost a lot of faith in our system. And then they closed our home. And that hurt because my kids loved being with my foster family. We did it together. I do not want to see them lose their children. And I'm terrified that that's what we're witnessing. And some of these families are on a road of termination of parental rights. And they are very close to losing their kids. And I just want people to wake up and to see how you say, well, what can we do? Well, You Are the Power has things on their website. youarethepower.net/Georgia, GA. And you can see who to email and who to call and to ask them to please look into these cases. We have a problem, and it's not just Georgia. I know that. Maya Kowalski made it big for everyone to see, but it is not isolated, you guys, and we don't need another Beata. Everyone who knows that story, how do you live your life without your children? How do you live your life when the one thing you want more than anything is taken from you unjustly? It's so gross. It's so wrong. And I don't want to go into just this deep depression. I want to fight. And I want people to do that too. I don't want them to tune it out because it's not happening to them. I want them to fight too. You don't have to be as loud as me, and you don't have to do interviews, but you can email, you can call, you can work in your own community and find out, is this happening in your area? See what you need to do. There are ways to help, and I just wish people would jump on board of this bandwagon to help these families.
I mean, that's the bottom line, is like, people who aren't affected by it need to also care about the people that are, because like, I've definitely been told a number of times that just to kind of let things happen and things will work out, and you can't watch a family go through this and be unjustly persecuted in certain ways and not do something. And I don't know how anybody would be able to do that. For those accusing the Hernandez family, whether it's the doctors or people in the system, has anybody done anything that they could have legal recourse for? You mentioned that they're so in debt from the legal fees for what has happened to them unjustly. Who's responsible for that? And is there any potential litigation that could happen?
I feel like there's enough families right now in Georgia. Banding together could be a beautiful thing. Rebecca Lindstrom with 11 Alive had said she's spoken to 24 families.
Wow.
That's a lot. If they all wanted to band together, I think that could be an awesome situation for them. The expert witnesses and attorneys are really expensive, and the parents have gone through several attorneys. You know, you go through the court appointed, then they hired, then they fired, then they needed to hire. That happens because you're looking for someone to fight to the death for your children. And it's very pricey to do that. It's very pricey. And the expert witnesses, understandably, aren't coming. Some actually don't charge, but you still have to pay for flight and hotel and reports. It's just really expensive, and it adds up. And we're helping the Hernandez as much as we can with fundraising, having yard sale, you know, in a couple weeks. Actually, we've already sold about $1,000. I have a friend from church who has sold over $3,000 worth of stuff on a Facebook yard sale. And, you know, she'll even say, well, I know it doesn't touch the 100,000. Yeah, but it does. It does. It absolutely, every little bit helps this family. At the end of the day, they want their kids. And if it takes, would you put a price on yours? Because that's been me from the beginning. What will it take for me to get my kids back? How much money am I willing to spend?
I will live under a bridge. You can have it all.
Yeah, you just do it. You just do it. And we're trying to tell them we're here and we're not going anywhere. We're going to help financially. I don't know. As far as the big picture, Rachel Bruno, I love reading her book. And if you're not familiar with that, great book. This happened with her a few years ago, and now she's an advocate for this kind of stuff. I would like reading what she did legally to get back a little bit. It really wasn't much, but that's not the point. The point is you want to hold people accountable.
Yeah.
And sometimes, unfortunately, the only way to do that is to hurt them where it hurts. And that's So we are finally getting to a place where people are listening, and we're now getting on the news. I'm just appreciative. If there's going to be something to fight for, I don't think there's anything better to fight for than innocent children and innocent families. Like, what is better than that?
Jen, can you tell us more about how you got involved with You Are the Power?
So like I said, I was drowning in my own sadness and my own pity, and my husband and I and a couple of the Hernandez family friends We were all emailing representatives, legislators, getting nowhere. DFACs closed their home. All these things are happening. And my sister sees me at my lowest. She was like, I'm going to make some emails. I'm going to make some calls. She ends up telling me, hey, there's this organization. They're a nonprofit called You Are the Power. And she said, I'm a member. They're only been around for about 2 years. They have free membership. They have paid membership. The point is you get emails from them of what's going on. They love to be activists for government overreach. They love to show human respect towards an individual or a family who is experiencing government overreach. So she tells me, I sent an email to them and they emailed me back. I didn't think much of it at all, you guys. I was just like, okay, that sounds good. And then it turned into, they want to have a Zoom call with us and Matt. From that first Zoom call, they were really vetting the case, and they have just become friends. They've just become amazing allies, advocates. Just, they're so caring and compassionate. It's awesome. So they are an amazing nonprofit, and they have just taken this on like it's their own personal burden. We have a state organizer. His name is Ryan Ralston, and he is the best. He's very educated in legal stuff. He's really great. My husband, Jonathan, me, and my sister, Mandy, are Georgia volunteers. Once they took on the Hernandez case, I met a couple of other families through Parents Behind the Pinwheels, and they would just kind of talk to me like, I see what you're doing for the Hernandez family. We're in the same situation. And then that turned into, why don't you reach out to You Are the Power? Let's see if what we can do. And now it's gotten to the point where it's a little bit overwhelming. Sadly, there's a lot of families affected by this, and they're reaching out, and they're reaching out quickly. And we're trying to vet each case because it's serious. You don't just take on these cases and start fighting for people. It needs to be legit. You need to make sure everything is as it says. We see all legal documents. We all look at it, higher ups approve it. And then we just start advocating for them, whether they need help finding therapists, whether they need help with media interviews, whether they need help, you know, with understanding DFACS laws, something my husband and I are able to do, kind of band together and you start finding a way to help. And getting Governor Kemp is our current goal right now. That's our current goal, is to get him to meet with us and these families.
You Are the Power. Is it just for Georgia, or is it?
No, absolutely not. They're all 50 states. All 50 states. And they do multiple causes. If you look on their page, they do some really awesome causes. For example, you know, there was a veteran. He was, I think, 99 years old. He didn't want to live with his daughters. He wanted to live independently they got him a nice RV. They put it in their property, and the county came in and said, no, you're not doing that. This isn't allowed. And they wanted to kick this veteran out of his RV. So You Are the Power got involved and made some calls and some emails and did some campaigning and got that situation fixed. They do a lot of awesome things just where the government is not showing human respect that people deserve. We have a case in Texas that we're working with, actually, even though they have the second opinions law. DFACS has found a way, and child abuse pediatrician found a way she did not want to give an antibiotic to her son. It was an antibiotic she felt was, it was still black box by pharmaceuticals. And so she found a different one through her pediatrician that she was willing to give her son. Well, the hospital didn't like that. So they sent DFACS, and they took her son. But they claimed it was because he was malnourished. So they find the second opinions thing can't work if they claim something different. So they're already finding workarounds on what they can do. So that's a case in Texas. And then we have 3 current cases in Georgia right now. And we've actually added on a 4th. We just haven't gone public with that yet. The Timms family is one of them, the Sullivan family, and the Hernandez family. And you can read about all of those. youarethepower.net/GA. And it just kind of gives a brief overview.
What are some action items for our listeners who want to do something to help the Hernandez family?
Yeah, there is a Give, Send, Go, which is very similar to GoFundMe. We helped them set that up a couple months ago. So I can link that to you maybe after, if that's appropriate.
Yeah, we could put a link.
Okay, so that's their Give, Send, Go, their fundraising page. Another thing that can be done is finding their stuff online and sharing it. The links that we have, Spike Cohen has posted a lot. You Are the Power has posted a lot. 11 Alive Atlanta with Rebecca Lindstrom. Just spreading awareness can help these situations, getting people to talk about this and to realize how much it's happening. Email Governor Kemp, and you don't have to live in Georgia. You can say that in your email. I am a citizen of Florida, but I'm concerned about what's happening in Georgia. If you go to youarethepower.net/Hernandez or /Timms or /Sullivan, you'll see each read up about the family. And then there's /Georgia, GA. That will link to all of the families that we currently have gone public with for the campaign, specifically for Governor Kemp. They can just start seeing this on the Parents Behind the Pinwheels page. You'll see the Hernandez story on there. So people can go straight from there and they can share that. In October, it was first mentioned through my husband and I, so they can actually read about it from our point of view, because we weren't going public with the Hernandez family yet at that time. So just getting awareness out there, I think, is a really big deal. Not everyone wants to give money and not everyone can give money. But sharing and talking about it and sending these emails is huge, because sending an email is really easy and simple.
If you want to help the Hernandez family and other families experiencing abuse of power in Georgia, please contact Governor Kemp's office at 404-656-1776 and ask him to meet with the Hernandez family, or message us on TikTok for more ways to help.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Make sure you subscribe and follow us on social. We hope that you join us again next time and keep on fostering the future.